Yes. So, the letters. Why do I just not read them? And then, I don't know, type them over, scan them in, use OCR to extract the text, whatever you do. And then just turn it into a book, right? Just do it. You've been through worse. I think that's safe to say by now. But I don't do it. And I will tell you why I don't do it. It's not necessarily just this one event, but there was a cause, like there was a specific cause that sort of was like the snowball before the I'm never reading these letters again avalanche. And that happened a few days after I came back with my letters because I convinced myself I was going to read them. Of course, like if someone gives you something like that, you read it immediately, right? No, not me. But I was going to take them to Dahab with me. Everything's packed. My backpack, my hand luggage, all good. Or personal items, what they call it nowadays. Packed, ready to go. I'm so excited. I have not been home since August, September, and it is March. So we're going. Today. Unless, I don't know, let's say I get admitted to hospital or something. Stranger things have happened, people. And actually, that's exactly what happens. That is exactly what happens. I'm not well, and I get admitted. No, I have to admit myself. I do go to the hospital that day, actually twice, and I get sent away twice. And so I have a feeling that even though I'm in a lot of pain, but if you get sent away from hospital twice, then there's nothing wrong with you, right? That's kind of what I assumed. And I'm glad that's what I assumed. But so yeah, sent back for the second time. My dad and I have dinner. My mom is babysitting my sister's kids. And during dinner, at some stage, oh yeah, because the hospital said, if there's anything, that's probably how she said it, we will call you. No phone call. Well, that's great news. So I was calm, definitely. In pain, but calm. And then maybe around 10-ish, no, maybe a little bit earlier, but okay, 9. Let's say 9. I check my emails and there's an email from the hospital from 7, I don't know, 7 something, let's say 7. And it says, I'm not joking, you guys, I'm not. When you read this email, you have to come to the hospital immediately. Not sure if it was all capitals or if there was a bunch of exclamation marks, but it was obvious that they expected me to be there already when I saw the email. I was, yeah. So we went and we decided, no, not we, so no. I decided, I convinced my father not to call my mother until we knew exactly what was going to happen. Emergency surgery. Well, you know by now what can happen during surgery or after, actually, in this case. So it's safe to say I was not looking forward to going under full anesthetics. Still don't know if it's the right term, but I'm gonna go for it. At least be consistent, right? Yeah. I call my mother. I downplay it, but I mean, how do you downplay a surgery at fucking midnight? But I tell her not to come straight away. I'm gonna go into surgery anyway, like right this minute. So I will see you tomorrow. Tears, I think there were tears from my mother's side. But okay, I don't think she slept a second that whole night. I go into surgery. The nurse, the male nurse has, or no, the anesthesia, I'm not even gonna try that word, whatever. The male nurse tells me before the surgery starts that because of the time, because operating theaters are not open in the middle of the night, usually, only for emergencies, only for VIPs like myself. And so the recovery room is also not open at that time of day or night. So I was going to be taken to the intensive care unit after they were done. So I already knew that, which was fine. It was, I have to say, a little bit more intense in hindsight than I thought, but I was not gonna think about it. Surgery takes place, great, super successful. They only needed one try instead of three in the other hospital, but yeah, they did a great job. And the guy at the people at the intensive care unit, I don't know if you've ever been there, I hope you haven't. But if you have, they are like premium people. They are very thorough and very vigilant. Maybe a little bit too vigilant for my situation, but great people. And one of the guys that works there has 100% read my file, knows it inside out, and knows that I don't wake up easily. So he's gentle with me and checks on me every 30 seconds. But I wake up, I don't know if it was immediately, I didn't ask, but I see relief. So I wake up soon, I think, quick. And I wake up delighted, absolutely over the moon, happy. I was on morphine. I don't know if there have been people on morphine before. Highly recommend, but under supervision, obviously. Don't start taking morphine. But in that situation, after a surgery, morphine is fucking fantastic. And he keeps asking me if I want more. Because I must be in so much pain. And I'm making weird noises. For me, the noises represent bliss and happiness. At that time, normally they don't, but I'm making noises like I know, well, I don't know why, but I do it and it feels good and I'm happy, I'm still happy. But this guy, because of the noises, keeps asking me if I want more painkillers. Are you in pain? I wasn't in pain at all, not a second. But I am happy with his offer for more morphine or whatever he gave me. So I kept saying yes. Yes, please. Give me more. He gave it. I maybe just put saline or placebo, but I think he just gave it to me. He was very generous. I'm telling this story because I want you to know that not every time I go into a hospital, I either have to stay or it ends in death and destruction. No. That is actually another surgery about my foot where I almost lost my leg. Jesus. Oh my God. When I was 14. That story. Okay, so just, yeah. This is a podcast, so things come up, right? There's nothing I can do about it. It's the same with writing, but when I write it down, you will never know. Now you do know. There will probably be another story about a hospital and me fucking herself up a little bit more than necessary. A lot of my operations were fucking voluntary. Why would I do these things? This one was not, by the way. So yeah, surgery done, Janneke happy. Janneke wants to go home and immediately. So I book a plane ticket. I don't think I did it in the hospital, but I was allowed to go back home the next day. So I book a plane ticket for 2 days later. I've had it. I wanna just be home. And I find a direct flight. Because that was the only condition that my mom and dad gave me. They were like, leave today if you have to, but book a direct flight, because they know the guy that the driver from the taxi service that we use. Mom and dad have been here twice, and so they know the guy and they trust him. So they're like, yeah, well, as soon as you're in Sharm el Sheikh, you'll be fine. But how do you get there fast? That was the only criterion that we had, fast. And we found one. It was direct, it was like 4 hours or something. I was gonna be home like this. With my letters. That's what the whole story was about, with my letters. So I go to the check-in counter of Transavia. I still need to fill in that form for the delay. Doesn't matter. I'm naming them by name because this is naming and shaming, okay? I'm never gonna fly with Transavia again. Just so you guys know. In the at the check-in, the backpack that I was just gonna use as like overhead compartment, whatever. What is it called? On-air luggage? I don't know. Or cabin luggage. But because of the state that I'm in, I check in the backpack, and the lady asks me, and I'm too honest. Do you have a laptop? Yes. We can't check it in. Oh. So I have to keep it with me. And it's heavy. It is really heavy. That's why I put it in the check-in. But mom and dad don't know what's going on. They can't see me checking in, so it's all good. I just shove it next to my letters. And I stole my sister's camera. Because I have never taken pictures before in my life. And I thought, I'm gonna become a photographer. So I need a camera. So I stole one. So I had that also. So I had one of those luggage carts with the bag with the letters and my whatever personal item, including laptop and a big camera bag. And I couldn't walk. I mean, I couldn't walk very well or very far or without pain. So as soon as I got to the gate, I was happy because it meant I didn't have to move anymore. That was the only objective, not moving. And 1 hour, 2 hours, two and a half. No plane. No plane. Some stage, the crew of the plane that was supposed to fly us to Sharm El Sheikh comes to the gate and explains to us what is going on. And I'm not lying. They don't have an empty plane available. Just fleet sold out. I don't know, they were all somewhere else. But they said, we have one that will have people on it when it arrives in Amsterdam, but it's in Malaga. So we will make some phone calls and have this guy on his way. Or girl, pilot, also possible. But for that to happen, have to go to another gate at the other side of one of Europe's largest airports. And here's a voucher for some coffee. Okay. I do not want to go to the other gate, but I have no option. There was part of me that wanted to, like, just grab one of those wheelchairs, but they're always gonna push me, let's be honest. I couldn't push myself. So that is one of the negatives, one of the downsides of being a solo traveler. If there is ever something, who's gonna push your wheelchair? Well, so I had to go to the other gate. I used the luggage cart to sort of use it as like a walking aid, because these things, like the handlebars, you have to like squeeze them before they roll. So I'm leaning on it with like kind of like my shoulders. I was sort of folded onto this thing. I was not squeezing the handlebars with my hands. I was squeezing the handlebars with my body. And I was sort of hoping that it would take me to the other gate. And it did. It was great. I was at the other gate. I did not have time to get coffee because it took me a while to get there. But finally, I'm there. And lo and behold, the crew again. People, we are very sorry to inform you that the plane is still in Malaga, but it is coming. It is definitely coming, just not to this gate. Is it okay if I feel sorry for myself sometimes? Not very often, not very often. And not now, like in hindsight, but in that moment, I was actually feeling quite sorry for myself. But they said, no, but it's definitely going to the other one. Also, and again, I don't know, we were not going back, but it was also another fucking far away corner of the airport. But we got a voucher for dinner. So nice. So nice. I actually grabbed my phone to look at like where the gate was, and I checked it a few times, because the first time I didn't want to believe it, the second time I was crying, and the third time was acceptance. And I decide, because I see on the map that quite close to the other gate, gate number 3, I can get food. So I was like, okay, good enough. Let's just go to the other gate. I performed the same sort of pretzel trick with the luggage cart, which by then I kind of got handy at, to be honest with you. It probably doesn't look the greatest, but by that time, I do not care anymore. I get to the gate. No, I get close to the gate and I see the place, the food place. So I know I'm there, almost there. And I'm hungry, I'm in pain, I want to sit down. So I just grab everything that looks edible to me. I have a voucher, right? So who cares if I have 3 bags of chips instead of 1? I don't know how long this is gonna take. I was supposed to be already at home. And I was still in Amsterdam. So I grab everything. And I get there and I give my voucher. The voucher is not valid here. And airport food is expensive, people. It's very expensive. Especially after you've just traveled South America for 6 months. I think it was 63 euros, but I don't remember exactly. But that number so prevalent in my head that I think it was 63 euros. It's like 2,000 pounds more. And anyway, not that expensive, but still. I had a voucher. This person could clearly see. Because initially he was like, no, you can use the voucher like there and there and there. First he was still smiling, but then when he saw my face and the state that I was in, he stopped smiling. I don't think he fully understood what was going on. But he understood he had to stop talking. I pay the food. I put it in the little basket on the luggage cart. But people, there is definitely light at the end of the tunnel because the plane is there. The people from Malaga get offloaded. They clean it to the best of their abilities in the shortest possible time to get us to Sharm el-Sheikh. Shukran. And I get there. It was very special. I don't know if the people that were there, that I met on the plane, that helped me to get off of the airport or out of the airport will ever listen to this, but you guys were a godsend. Because the Sharm el-Sheikh airport, these people were like sitting close to me on the airplane, and they were feeling quite sorry for me. I was not in a good state. So we land and we walk, or I stumble. I wasn't walking anymore. And they were husband and wife. And the husband at some stage, somewhere in the arrivals hall, sees a wheelchair. An Egyptian wheelchair, but a wheelchair. Nothing against Egyptian wheelchairs, but this one was a little bit crooked. But the wheelchair came with a guy. You can't just grab a wheelchair in Egypt. Like, put a coin and here's your wheelchair. No. I wish this guy would have been in Amsterdam. Oh my God, I would have been in the gate like in 2 minutes. As soon as I sit down in the wheelchair, this guy takes off. I don't know where he's going. I don't know where my luggage is, but he takes off. And he yells, only thing he yells is priority, okay? I'm a priority. I'm the first at the customs, I'm first at the passport control check, I'm first everywhere. And at the end of whatever circus, because some of it was not like a straight line. It was like this slalom, I don't know the English word, what is it called? Like going from left to right, just queuing, but like not straight. And he would do, instead of just lifting these sort of belt things, no man, he just went straight to, we probably hit some people here and there. But I'm first everywhere. And before I know it, literally before I know it, I'm in the arrivals hall. And the guy wants money. I have no money because I have no luggage. He thinks these people are my parents. People are not my parents. People are strangers. So my luggage is still in the belt. So I try to explain to him that he has to take me back. He wants money. He starts asking the other people that he thinks are my parents for money. I think actually at some stage the guy gives him like £200 or something. I don't know. But anyway, he's happy and he leaves. And I'm sitting there in my wheelchair. This was about letters, remember? Oh God. I'm sorry that these things are so long, but they just, too much happens. Or too much like in one day or in like one consecutive, whatever disaster. It's like Murphy's Law, right? Everything that can go wrong, goes wrong. I have to get back in, but you can't, you're not allowed to. So the guy, because I don't have my wheelchair driver anymore. I get out of my wheelchair. I have nothing. Well, that's not entirely true. I have a small sort of fanny pack. I don't know if that's slang or a normal word, but yeah. So I have my passport, so that's good. And I have my bank card. So I decide, because I'm like, if I have to go stand in all those lines again, I'm fucked. I will never get to the end. So let's get our money first. Like, I've been to Egypt a gazillion times. I'm living there. I know which ATM works and I know which card I have to put in. I pick the right card, I pick the right machine, I type in the right PIN number. I get as much money as I can. It says, take your money. Oh no, first you always have to take your card, right? Then it says, take your money. No money. I think this is for a next voice note.